Tonight is Tuesday night, November 27th. This is the Women's Mishnah Share, moved up a night. Or of the 15th day of the month of Kislev, we are in the middle of Maseches Bava Kamma, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Bet. Okay? Says the Mishnah. Kol shechavti b'shmirato, hichsharti et nizko. It's a very unusual phrase. Kol shechavti b'shmirato. The way the Gemara winds up translating. Anything for which I am chayav to provide shmira, and I fail to do so. Hichsharti et nizko. I am the one who is responsible for the damage that took place. Kol shechavti b'shmirato, any time or any situation where I am obligated to provide shmira, and I fail to do so, hichsharti et nizko. I facilitated, I am responsible for what? For the damage that took place. We referenced this Mishnah a couple of weeks ago when we raised the question, what is the trigger of my obligation to pay for damages? And one of the possible responses was the fact that I am assigned a chiyuv of shmira and I am negligent. So what triggers my obligation to pay for damages? After all, I didn't damage anything. My ox did it. Well, why should I pay? Answer, because I am assigned a responsibility to watch my animal. And if I was not assigned such a responsibility, the inference from this Mishnah is, I would not have to pay. I would not have to pay. Because there's got to be something to link me to the fact that my property caused damage for you. And I have to be held accountable. The mere fact that I own it from this Mishnah's vantage point is not sufficient. Not sufficient. And several other cases in this Mishnah will demonstrate that as well. So this Mishnah tonight, going forward, will support the premise that what triggers the obligation to pay for damages is the fact that I am assigned responsibility to watch this piece of property and make sure that it does not. When I am negligent, posheya, in my responsibility, the pshia, the negligence of my responsibility, triggers my obligation to pay. Therefore, I'll give you one simple case where I'm not expected to provide. Shmira. We will learn later next week, probably, that there is one of the titanic machloket concerning the obligation of a payment for an ox that gores. Everybody knows, and if you don't know, I'll tell you, we mentioned it a bit, that an ox that gores, for the first three times, it only pays 50% of the damages. Chatzi nezek. Only 50%. And you can look at the 50% payment from two different vantage points. A, by right, I should have paid 100%. But for some reason, the Torah has a little compassion upon me. And says, you know what? I'm going to let you off the hook the first three times. Partially. Why? Partially. Why are they suddenly going to be a little compassionate? Because they know how terribly difficult it is for me to control an ox that gets angry. And it's angry. He sees the red little cape. That's my responsibility. He gets all crazy. Or somebody decided to look at him a little funny, twist his, man, give him a chuckle, but the new is, that gets him all crazy. I'm responsible. So the Torah understands that. Yes?
I thought it also had to do with It hasn't established itself.
That's the reverse. The other side of the coin is that I should pay nothing. Because this is such an unusual thing, unusual, that I had no obligation to anticipate that it would have done it. And if I have no obligation to anticipate, what do I have to do? I don't have to watch for it. I'm only expected to watch and prevent things that I'm expected that are within the realm of possibility. If the item is not possible, or within the it's not in the realm of possibility, why should I be expected to watch? So therefore, I really should have paid nothing. But the Torah is applying a fine. You know what? This little uxel of yours seems to be budding trouble. You better start paying a little more attention to it. So as a little slap on the face, what do? They assign you 50%. And the second time, 50%. Third time said, we've warned you enough, buddy. We're saddling you with the responsibility to watch perfectly. And therefore you're going to pay four times. Yes?
But couldn't you say an animal, like an ox, it's known that they do this. So couldn't you say that you automatically, you buy an ox, you've got
okay,
to be sure.
That's the first side of the coin. They're in effect debating, how does the Torah perceive behavior of an ox? That's what they're really debating. Does the Torah perceive that an ox, when you, Debbie, buy one, you have to assume that this is the tendency of the ox? Or does the Torah presume that when you purchase it, that's not within the normal tendencies of an ox? And hence, it's out of your domain. It's acting irrationally, out of the normal classical behavior patterns of an animal. And as a result, we can be somewhat compassionate upon it. That's exactly the nature of the debate. But I just illustrate that to demonstrate support for the premise. That if for some reason we can demonstrate that I am not obligated to watch, why would I be not obligated to watch? Because the animal doesn't normally exhibit that type of behavior pattern. Once I am relieved of the obligation to watch, that's it. There's no further compensation possible. So the Mishnah here articulates that principle clearly. Kol shechavti b'shmirato, hichsharti et nizko. Anything for which I am obligated to provide shmirah, and I, you have to add the words, and I fail to do so, hichsharti et nizko, I have now facilitated that damage, hence I am obligated to pay. Continues the Mishnah with a far more difficult phrase. Hechsharti b'miktzat nizko. If I'm responsible for part of the damage, and then it damages, but I didn't do the whole thing. I did not engage in an activity for which I should be assessed total blame, only partial blame. Okay, we're going to see in a second. What's the halacha? Chavti b'tashlumi nizko kehechsher kol nizko. I am obligated to pay for the full damages as if I was facilitating what? The whole thing. As if I was responsible for the whole thing. Being responsible for part generates obligation for full compensation. So in order to understand what this word means, we immediately have to go to the Gemara, because Rashi knows this, the Gemara and the Farishla. The Gemara says, because the case means not, what does that mean? So let's take a look at a case, flip the sage to page 2, and we'll see how the Gemara approaches it. How the Gemara approaches it. Yeah, how the Gemara approaches. It's the Aleph. I bracket it. Hechsharti b'miktzat nizko. Tanu Rabbanan. The Rabbanan, a braita. You know that phrase. You better know that phrase. That is a braita. A parallel phraseology of a Mishnah that was not included in the Mishnah by its editor, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Formulated at the same time as the Mishnah, but it usually gives some additional information above and beyond the Mishnah. Hechsharti mizksat nizko, Chavti b'tashlumi nizko kehechsher kol nizko. That's exact quote of the Mishnah. Exact same thing. That if I'm responsible for what? Partial damage. If I facilitate part of the damage, I pay for the whole thing. I pay for the whole thing. Esther Ketzad, can you give me an illustration of what you're talking about instead of talking Chinese? So here I have to give you a little introduction. An introduction. If I dig a pit in a street, 1 foot deep, how much damage is that foot, is that pit capable of doing?
Not.
1 foot deep?
Okay.
What?
Not going to kill anyone.
Oh, okay.
But he could break a leg.
Good, but he could break a leg. Good. Good. So now the Gemara now understands that in order to be held liable for the death of an animal, let's first talk about an animal. For the death of an animal, the bore, the pit, has to be much deeper in order for it to have, the animal have fallen in and to receive the type of clot and wound that would be result in loss of life. That figure, according to the Gemara, is 10 tefachim. Anything less than 10 tefachim deep, the Gemara does not believe, is at 40 inches. A tefach is 4 inches, like the height of a mechitza. The height of a mechitza is 40, is 10 tefachim. But every mechitza, wall of a Shabbos, wall of a sukkah, wall of a mechitza of a shul, every din mechitza is asar tefachim. So the Rav always said, if the mechitza is 3 feet, 4 inches off the ground, you can daven in that shul. You can, because it's halakhic. No, you can easily see over the mechitza. And I had to rely on that 1 year in 1970. I accepted a position to daven in the shul on Rosh Hashanah and Kippur in Astoria, Queens. An Orthodox rabbi, I know him very well, and I walk into the shul, and there was the mechitza, exactly 3 feet, 4 inches. Exactly 3 feet, 4 inches. And I doubt, that was a bunch of old times there, so it made no difference. Now it's a shy, fine. So the Chachamim have established, based on their understanding, that if you have an animal falling into a pit, it cannot, under ordinary circumstances, generating death. And if it's only 9 tefachim and the animal dies, I am exempt. I don't have to pay for the damages. Because I did not create a pit that is capable of what? Of sustaining, of creating, of being responsible for such damage. So between 1 tefach and 10 tefachim, damage can take place, but death cannot take place. That's a fact, according to the Gemara. Fact according to the Gemara. Now comes the partial plan. I dug a pit of 9 tefachim. You came and added the 10th tefach. Okay? That's going to be the Gemara's illustration of Miktsat Nizka. Let's read it inside. Let's read it inside. Ketzad.
This Ketzad is still part of the Brisa.
Yes, this is still part of the Brisa. That's correct. That's why the Gemara is bringing the Brisa, because it furnishes information that the Mishnah doesn't. Correct. Ketzad. Hachofer bor tish'a. If somebody digs a pit of 9 tefachim, uba acher v'hishlimo la'asara, and somebody else now completed it and added the 10th tefach, who is liable for whatever happens? The Gemara doesn't know what happened yet. Who is liable for what happened? So the Braita just says, Acharon Chayav.
That's the end of the Braita.
That's the end of the Braita. The last guy is Chayav. That's all it says. We don't know what happened to it. Did the animal die? The animal get... We don't know. The Braita simply states the last guy is chayav. So just now, I'm going to ask you a question. Tell me, what does it mean in the Mishnah? Hechsharti miktsat nizko. What does that mean? Hechsharti miktsat nizko. What does it mean?
I caused
only part. Only one tefach worth.
But the last person we're talking about? In other words, the first one.
That's the case.
Is it the first person?
Uh-huh. The first guy who dug nine, according to this price, pays nothing.
It's also miktsat, though.
That's the question. Elaborate. Hold on. Right now, I'm just taking the Gemara stages. Right now, the Gemara says, what is the case? I added the tenth tefach. I dug it one tefach. Says the Mishnah, Chavti b'tashlume kol nizko. I have to assume responsibility for all of the damages. Now, let's understand. The Gemara will allow. How did the Gemara? Now it's not the Braita anymore. That was the end of the Braita. Now, you and me are the Gemara now. And we're perplexed and bewildered. What happened? Did the animal die? Did the animal get hurt? Why should the guy who dug the first nine be totally exempt? What? The Gemara's going to explain that. That's exactly what's going on here. We're in the Beis Medrash now, in Pumpadisa. That's where we are, in Pumpadisa. Somewhere in Iraq. Udilah Kerebi. And this statement of this Braita cannot agree with something that Rebbe once said. Udula Kerebi. What did Rebbe say? Quote another Braita. The Sanya we learned in the Braita. Hachofer bor tish'a. If somebody digs a pit 9 tfachim deep, Uba acher vehishlimo la asara, and some other dude came along and what added the 10th tefach. First opinion says, acharon chayav. The last guy is obligated for all of what happens, whether the animal dies or breaks a leg. Whether the animal dies or breaks a leg, only the second guy who added the 10th tefach pays a dime. The guy who dug the first nine pays zero. Zero. Bryce doesn't explain why. Rebbe says no. Achar acharon lemita. Achar shnehem linezakim. Rebbe seems logical. Very logical. Name. If the animal dies, I know why I can only assign blame and culpability to the second guy. Because the first guy did nothing that would cause death. He only dug a pit of nothing. So had the second guy come and not added the tenth, you know, according to statistical probability, this animal would still be alive. Hence, he, the second guy, shoulders the entire responsibility. But if it only broke a leg, says Rebbe, it could have broken a leg with 9, a tefach deep, and a 10th one. What difference does it make? Nothing whatsoever. Therefore, the two of them split the damages.
Equally?
Equally.
Even though...
That's correct. Excellent point. Maybe we should assign 9. We shall see. Right now, achar shnehem means we split it 50-50. That's correct. That's why I told you we saw no comment. These cases are complicated, very complex, and it sounds like you got nothing better to do all day except sit in the basement and create these crazy cases. Crazy cases. So the Gemara says, our Mishnah, which says, or the first Braita, which is the interpretation of our Mishnah, that the second guy bears full responsibility for everything, our Mishnah cannot be formulated according to Rebbe. Because according to Rebbe, damages should not be assigned exclusively to the second one. Damages should be split between the two people. What percentage? Right now, 50-50. So it would be very funny. It's very odd. Listen to this. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is the editor of the Mishnah. He is editing a Mishnah which we read tonight, 20 minutes ago, which cannot agree with his own opinion. It cannot agree with his own opinion. Because he personally believes that the Mishnah is not correct. Because the Mishnah is only correct if what happened to the animal? It doesn't say that in the Mishnah that the animal died. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, cognizant of the fact that the majority opinion was against him, formulated a Mishnah which would now not represent his own opinion and be representative only of the majority opinion. Because he personally disagrees. Yes, it is. It's a very interesting phenomenon. Normally an editor of a book would never choose to edit something which he personally couldn't subscribe to. You'd think that the editor subscribes to everything. No, I agree with everything. I don't agree with some of this.
I disagree with it.
Yeah, especially since you've got a writer
that would confirm his opinion. Right. So formulate the Mishnah the way you like it.
Right.
Exactly. He could have selected that Braita,
right,
not this one.
Right.
All right. But he didn't.
How were Braita... how do we have Braita?
We have collections. It's like we have Mishnahs.
But
there's a collection of Braitas authored by Rabbi Chiya.
Okay.
In the back of every Shas Gemara,
right,
there's called a Tosefta.
Right.
So that's a collection of Braitas.
Right.
So,
but isn't it possible that they would have gotten lost if they had not been included in the Mishnah?
No. I imagine there were plenty of Braitas that were lost. That's correct.
Because this is the...
Correct. Our collection of the Tosefta is only one version of it.
Right.
Rabbi Chiya's. There's another one of Rabbi Shine. The author, bar none, the expert on Tosefta, is Shaul Lieberman.
Right.
Shaul Lieberman from the seminary. The world's greatest expert on Tosefta. He wrote a book, 20 volumes, called Tosefta Kipshuta. Simply elucidating, and he was a spectacular, a tremendous scholar. There's no doubt. Chaim Soloveitchik Rav said that he used to talk to him a lot often. He says, I never found any time at discussing anything in Shas that he didn't know what was going on his fingertips. Mm. On his fingertips. Okay. He's a tremendous scholar, there's no doubt. Now, didn't agree with the seminary on a lot of issues, but he was a Talmud teacher. On many, he had his own minion with a mechitza in the seminary. In the seminary, yeah.
The person who did the one.
Yes.
We don't concern ourselves with his intentions at all, that maybe he didn't know there was mine, or maybe he did it maliciously, the reverse.
No. We assume that you have a responsibility to make sure. If you're digging in other things, you made him as sure that you knew that it was 9 and you added 10. Don't claim I didn't know. I thought it was 7, I'm only adding to 8.
We assume he knows that.
We don't think, whether he assumes it or not, he has that responsibility. By adding an additional tefach, he has to recognize the possibility that he created a bar of 10.
Doesn't the person who's done the 9 have the responsibility to protect it so that a person can't come and dig a 10?
Good. So maybe I did. Maybe I did. Maybe I took away a cover. Exactly. Yes.
Does it matter whether the 9 is dug first or the single one is dug first?
Yes, of course. Because if the single one is dug first, who is the second one who created the 10? The guy does the 9. That's correct. The reason why the Mishnah does it, the Gemara does it, because it's a much greater chidush. The guy who added just 1 assumes full responsibility for everything, even though 9/10 of the pit was dug by somebody else.
What if it's 5? Or whatever
it's called. Oh, hold on! You didn't ask the right question. You did ask the right question. That's going to be a machlokes rishonim. What happens?
It's half and half.
No, if we never reach the threshold of 10, we never reach the threshold of 10.
No,
I will tell you that you didn't. That's
right,
no question.
Right. It's
5 and 4 is perfect.
Yes, don't confuse me.
That's it. So come on, Ruth. Confusion. So
then what's the third?
I'm going to get to it. Hold on a second. If it's 5 to 4, this mark is silent. Do we take, is the machloikis between the Chum and Rebbe relevant when the second guy just added an additional five, but still did not reach the ten. The Gemara is silent about it. We will see a machloekas
or mishnah.
The
third person who adds that one.
The third one who adds the ten. But back to this machloekas again. But back to this. Correct. The tenth is the critical one.
The five to four is the one you sink your teeth in.
Correct. We will. Let's see that. Right. We'll see that in a minute. That's not what the Gemara is talking. That'll be a subcategory because the Gemara doesn't discuss that.
And this second braita ends right before Rav Papa, right?
Right before Rav Papa. That is correct. Right. Now, Rav Papa did not want that this particular braita should be operating only according to non-Rebbe. And therefore he said, Rav Papa Amar Lamita. That the only case being discussed in this braita is what happens to the animal. The animal died. V'divrei Hakol. What is V'divrei? Everybody agrees to that. That if the animal dies, everyone agrees that for death, Rebbe and the Chachamim agree that who is responsible under those circumstances? The guy who handed the tenth death. In which case, if that's what the Mishnah is talking about, we're talking about an animal that dies, then the editor of the Mishnah has a Mishnah that supports his opinion. Because their case has been localized. It's less, we're not discussing the case of damages. What are we discussing? Only when the animal died. So when the animal dies, there is not a person thus far on the planet who says that it's not the second guy who's chayav. Everyone agrees. In which case, it's not against Rebbe, but Rebbe has the support of everybody. So when Rebbe formulates his Mishnah, in our Mishnah, he has his support as well. Yeah.
Did Rebbe include this braita because it's the majority and therefore
Rebbe
if it's brought up in a case, it's got
height. Rebbe did include the braita. Rebbe wrote them, edited the Mishnah. So according to the first version of the Gemara, when Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi edited our Mishnah, which we started off with tonight, it operated on the assumption that the halacha was against Rebbe. Because what is the case talking about? Two possibilities. One where the animal got damaged, and one where the animal died. In which case, there is a debate in that case. Rebbe says that they both share for damages, and they only agree, and only the second one dies if the animal died. And the Chachamim say, no, the second guy assumes responsibility for everything. In which case, the Mishnah does not agree with Rebbe Nevas. According to Rav Papa, the word damages is to be stricken from the lexicon in for tonight's discussion. The case which we are to discuss is only what happened, the animal died. If the animal died, there is no one who claims that the first guy has some responsibility. Who? Everyone agrees. Everyone. The Chachamim and Rebbe agree that if the animal dies, who is the only guy who's responsible? The second guy. So now we reread the Mishnah. Reread the Mishnah according to Rav Papa. If you go back to the Mishnah now, I'm going to go back to the first page for a second. Go back to the first page. I'm going to reread that second line, starting the second word on the second line, and read it both ways. Hechsharti b'mitzat nizko. If I am responsible for part of the damage, now what's the case? Somebody dug a pit of nine, and I added the tenth. The first way to read this Mishnah is that two things could have happened to this ox. Two things could have happened. One, what? The animal died. One is that what?
Injured.
According to the first way to read the Mishnah, in all cases, chavti v'tashlumi nizko kehechshar kol nizko. It's as if the second guy dug the entire pit and he pays for everything. It's as if the second guy dug the entire pit and he pays for everything. Can Rebbe agree with that? No. In which case, these words, lines 2 and 3 of our Mishnah, are not formulated according to Rebbe. Now I read Rav Papa's version. Rav Papa says, I'm reading the Mishnah again. Hichsharti b'mitzak nizko. If I am responsible for partial, what did I do? I added the tenth. And what is the case being discussed?
The animal died.
And the animal died. Who pays now? Chavti b'tashlum minesoy kasher kozva. The second guy has to pay for the damages and the death of the animal. What happens if the animal was only injured? This Mishnah is not talking about it. I don't know. So the Gemara offered two possibilities how to read these two lines of the Mishnah, and the difference would be whether Rebbe is part of the discussion in this Mishnah, according to Rav Papa he is, or it is not according to Rebbe, because there is a possibility that the Mishnah is talking about not only that what the animal died, but even if it was just injured. Even if it was just injured.
So what Rav Papa basically is saying is, please ignore the second injury that was brought.
No.
Not on this page, on the other page.
No. That, what do you mean?
Well, Rav Papa said, we're talking only about...
Death. Correct. Correct. Exactly. It's not the relevant. It's not to be identified with our Mishnah. That's all. Talk about it some other time. Exactly. Not tonight. For our discussion tonight, the animal died. This happens often where you try to narrow the discussion and as a result create less machloikas. Less machloikas. Rav Papa's version eliminates much discussion. We don't have to discuss your case if it was 5 and 4. Why don't we have to discuss your case? Because that's not the case being discussed in the mission. What happened to the animal dying? What happened to the animal? It died. How could the animal die? Only if the pig was 10. So your discussion goes for some other time. Not tonight. According to the first version, where we are entertaining a discussion in our Mishnah of both the animal dying and the animal getting injured, and the Chachamim say that what? Rabbi Rebbe says that what? That for damages both of them have to pay, both of them. Now we have to entertain your question. Is that they both pay when it's only 9 to 10? Something magical happens when it goes from 9 to 10? Or even from 5 to 4 as well. We will have to entertain it. So depending on which view we... Not that your question is irrelevant according to one view. It's not for tonight's discussion. Because the Gemara is limited its focus tonight. It's limited its focus. So there are two possibilities as to what. Let's try to understand logically what's happening in the sukkah. Let's try to understand what's happening. If you had not heard any of the discussion tonight, okay, I'm going to quote to you a pasuk. Yeah, the Torah says that if something, right, ki yichra ishbor, if somebody digs a pit, or ki yiftach ishbor, either means you dug the pit from the beginning, or you, it was covered, and ki yiftach, and something finished, says the Torah, ba'al habor yishalei. That's the text of the Pesach in Parshas Mishpatim. Baal Habor Yishalei. You never learned this Gemara tonight. You never did. I ask you, ladies, translate the phrase, or define the phrase, the owner of the pit shall pay. Baal Habor.
And it doesn't have anything to do with how big the bor is.
I know. We know that the case. That's the case. So now what's running, why do I introduce that phrase?
Because is the one a vowel or is the nine a vowel?
Yeah, why? So what's important from the Torah's perspective is to define one thing. Who is identified as the owner of this pit? Who's identified as the owner of the pit? So now let's rethink the cases and come to the conclusion. The pit was 9. So who is the first guy who dug this pit? Of course, the guy who dug the 9. He's the owner of this pit. Now comes somebody and digs another tefach. Here's what's running through the Gemara's mind. Since halachically, this is now a different type of a bor, Why is it different type of a ball? Why? Why is it a different type? Because it's a death trap. It's a death trap. I can entertain the possibility that the first guy's actions don't exist anymore. Who is now the Baal HaBor? Only the second guy. Correct. So let's think of it along those lines. Who undoubtedly thought that that was the case if that took place? Everybody believes that. That if death takes place, there is only one person to assign the label Baal HaBor Yishalem. Only one person, the second guy. Because only the second guy dug a pit. You're right, there was nine there before him. But the first nine become irrelevant in light of the fact that the tenth guy created something new. So we now assign category Baal HaBor only to Mr. Number 2. And the guy can't say, you know what? Had he not dug my nine, his nine, my animal, would not have. Too bad, buddy. That's what the Torah has been mechadish. That's clear. Now you have enough information on your fingertips. Let's see what happens if the animal did not die. Did not die. What now becomes the debate between Rebbe, who claims that they want both pay, and the Chachamim who said, still, the second, don't be religious, tell me what are they debating? What's the core? So now tell me why one says this and why one says that.
Okay, so one argument is it doesn't matter if it died or not. Now it's a death penalty.
Correct.
It's a new thing.
Rebbe, the first guy is of the opinion, first the Tanakhama is of the opinion, once you create a new pit, even though the animal never died, but you did create a new pit. So who am I going to assign the title as the owner of this pit? The second guy. Okay. Even if it subsequently only became damaged, you are now the owner of this pit. That's why the first guy, pays absolutely nothing according to the Tanakhama. Because since your action helped create something brand new, you dug a new bar, some bar that didn't exist, before any animal falls in, we now have assigned a tag. Owner, Mr. Number 2, yet his name is John, you own this pit. Okay. Now the animal falls in 2 days later, breaks a leg. I got enough. What does the Torah say? Baal HaBor Yishalem. Therefore, the first opinion is, it makes no difference whether the animal dies or it gets injured. It makes no difference. Why does it make no difference? Because all I have to answer is one question. Who is the owner of the pit? Once I know that this second guy created something that halakhically did not exist when the first guy dug his nine, I now award title of this bar to Mishnah Number 2. Therefore, no matter what happens, he assumes the title Baal HaBor Yishalem. And Rebbe says no. Based on his logic. That the mere fact that I added a tenth to the pit, a tenth tefa, but the animal didn't die. Mm-hmm. So make believe, says Rebbe, that the second guy, what, added 9.5. Who cares that he added 10? Who cares? Did you do something to make a pit?
Yes.
Did the first guy do something to make a pit?
Yes.
So who will I assign title of this one? I assign two people assign responsibility.
Equal.
Right now it's equal. Because even though I created a new pit, that only the newness is only relevant if what happened to the animal? The newness. Only if it dies. If it doesn't die, that additional tefach plays no role whatsoever. So why should I obviate obligation from guy number one? If the contribution of guy number two did absolutely nothing above, but I can't dismiss him completely.
Why not?
Because, tell me why not. Because what possibility exists if I had not edited the average tefach?
Then he wouldn't have been.
Right. That's why I started off our discussion. If I dig a tefach 1 foot, one tefach there. Most times you fall in, you know, yeah, maybe you twist. You're not going to break a leg. Well, maybe this animal was strong enough. Maybe this animal was strong. If it was nine, nothing would have happened. Mm-hmm. What did you do? You made sure that he broke his leg. Pay the consequences. So there are two people who are balabor. That's what Rebbe says. And the Chachamim say no. There's only one balabor always. It's just a question of assigning who is that one balabor. So if you created, if you just added from 7 to 8, what would they say? Well, the first guy made that bar, he didn't add anything. You added something to an existing bar, but the first guy is still there. But if you go from 9 to 10, you created a new halachic reality. Hence, you are the owner of this pit. The other guy is off the hook completely. Off the hook completely.
But a new halachic reality is only if the animal actually died?
Because in which case? No, that's Rav Papa's case. In the first, according to the first opinion, it makes no difference who died. Whether he died or not, even if he got injured. Who has been put on the board? So whose pit is this? According to the second one, it's his pit. Why is it his pit? Because he created something that didn't exist before.
Right, so I'm asking, what would the Chachamim say if it went from 9 to 9.5?
In all probability, it will say nothing. Only the first guy is obligated.
So they would say only the first guy is obligated.
Correct. That's what I'm answering, Susan, in the meantime. That's correct. From 5 to 9, ain't nothing changing. Only the first guy does it. That's correct.
And then they would not say split the cost.
They're correct. That is correct.
He was careful
because he didn't want to be held accountable if an animal falls in. We will learn later, it's a Gzeiras HaKasev, that based on the Torah's phrase, here is the phrase, Ki yiftach ish o ki yichre o ki yiftach ish bor v'nafal shama shor o chamor bal habor yishalem. The Gemara learns out drash shor velo adam. Shor velo adam. Meaning, if a human being falls into a pit and dies, I have no responsibility for that. Shor velo adam. Chamor velo kelim.
If your car goes into it.
Well, we'll see about that. Right now, it's talking about my pot falls into it. No, I don't have to pay for that at all. We'll see why. So, I mentioned that only one reason. I want to get a human being out of this equation. It's a pasuk. I don't know the logic. Drash, shor, velo adam.
The assumption is that the person who would fall in had responsibility on himself.
Precisely. What does he do? He has eyes. What should he do?
Walk around it.
So
why isn't the person who owns the shore?
Because an ox is a dumb ox.
But then why do you have to build a house? Why do you have to build a fence around the roof? You can
exactly.
Say the same thing. Why does make sure that you don't walk to the edge of the roof and fall over?
Okay. That's correct. But that's for compensation for damages. The Torah places a higher value on human life to make sure. Forget, if I go onto your roof, right, and I walk off, and you don't have a fence there, am I going to be prosecuted, and I die, am I prosecuted for murder? No. This is a moral issue, not a compensation issue. The halacha of ma'akeh. You should always try to avoid accidents. Don't create your house where accidents are prone to happen. That has nothing to do with responsibility. You're right, I walked up on the roof myself. You didn't force me up there. And I walked off and I fell off. The Torah, you can't, you're not prosecuted. Nothing. But you had a moral responsibility to make sure that accidents don't happen on your property. It's a different principle. It's a different principle.
It's not an issue of bond, it's an issue more of taking care of somebody else.
Correct. Of making sure that I am not responsible for loss of life, not compensation. And I'm not responsible, but I'm not responsible for damages, but that somebody don't get hurt, but I'm not compensated. It's not a compensation issue. I'm not a mazik. I'm not a mazik in that case. Who told you to walk on my roof? But just because I didn't tell you to walk on it doesn't mean that I should set it up the roof, that you should, that accidents happen. I should take the precautions necessary to make sure that accidents don't happen. Put a ma'akeh, bigageh, correct. Right? Good. So now comes the last question. What happens if the first guy did 5 or 6, and the second guy only added 3, did not come to 9? Did not come to 10. So I tell you, the Gemara, mum, silent, doesn't discuss the case. The Gemara's case, where partial only takes place, is going from Tisha to Asara.
But the assumption will go on the same thing as Tisha.
The other way, it's still
a question. I don't know. That's now I'm going to ask the question. If it's somebody dug 6, the next guy dug 3, based on what we said, and obviously, if the animal died, there's nothing to talk about. Why?
Neither am I going to pay,
because it's not 10, so there's nothing to talk about. So the only discussion that we have to entertain is if the animal got dead. So now what are the two sides of the coin in this regard? One says the first guy pays and that's it. The other opinion says they share responsibility. They share responsibility. So give me the logic as to what might be the basis of that answer. That. What's the machloikos? Here is the case. Gemara doesn't discuss it. It's Susan's case. Somebody dug 5. The next guy dug 4. So halachically, did he create a new bar?
No,
he did not. That's the simple interpretation. Since the second one added nothing halachically to the pit, therefore, who retains the owner, the balabar? He pays the whole thing, and that's it. That's the majority opinion. Because the second guy just amplified the first guy, but he did nothing new, significant, to assess him to earn his stripes. As the what? As the balabar. He's not the balabar. It's a little more difficult to explain conceptually if you hold that what? That both of them have to pay. They have to share the burden here. And it's a little more difficult. And you assume that what they're saying is that even, as we pointed out, even as it comes to damages, there is a pit called a pit of one. That can create damage A. A pit of 2 can create damage plus. A pit of 3, each time you're creating a new type of pit. One that is capable of inflicting greater damage. Hence, you might be entitled to be earning your stripes, your balabar. But the prevalent view is no. That you don't operate with gradations of damages. In order to earn the title balabar, you have to do something halachically significant. Significant. Do you know of another area where two people might be involved and there will be a similar discussion who might have to do, who might bear responsibility? You know of another area of Jewish law? In Hilchos Shabbos. Shnayim she'asu melacha. A melacha took place. Exactly. A melacha took place, but not by one person. I do half the melacha, you do half the melacha. So let's talk about hotza'ah in a Rosh Hashanah. That's a classic illustration. Right?
You stop and you go a certain distance.
Yeah. You're now going to carry this four amot in a Rosh Hashanah. So I walk two amot, and you take it from me, and you carry the next. Right? So in this case, the item was moved four amot in a public thoroughfare on a Shabbos. And then you brought it to rest there. So there is discussion about Shnayim Sha'asuhu. Two people did maybe we'll so there are two possibilities. Either both of them are chayiv. Three possibilities. Neither of them are chayiv, correct. Or one of them is chayiv, right? Maybe the first, we don't know. In all these cases, that's going to be another area where joint effort will be a discussion. How much liability do we assign to the first guy who did part of it, and how much do we do to the second guy who completed the job? Yes.
But you can say that here with the board. We're talking about person A digs, then he goes to a shear, and
right,
then somebody else, B, finishes it.
Right.
What if A and B are digging a pit together, and they dig it?
That? So you answer that question based on who would you entitle, who would you give the title in this case, owner of the pit?
I haven't a clue.
No, you do. Just take a step. Logically, what would you say in that case? They're both digging the pit together. What would you say?
They're joint owners.
Uh-huh. Exactly. They're both doing the same thing. They're not doing distinct. They are both doing the same thing. So there is a parallel to that in Masechta Shabbos as well. If two of us hold this tape recorder, Shnayim Sosu, a different case. We both hold it, and what? And we walk together. And we go to four cubits. So the Gemara will say that one of the things, if it could have done by either one, they're both chayav, or they're both patur. If it's so heavy to carry this table that we needed each other to carry it four cubits, everyone agrees we're both chayav. Because we both contributed. Here in this case, I could have done it alone, you could have done it alone. Maybe neither of us held account. But I don't want to go into the cases, but you just show you how you can get involved in additional discussion about joint participation, about a malach on Shabbos. There's a whole perek in Shabbos that deals with Shnayim She'asuhu. Yes.
Does Makabu Patish enter into this?
No. Yes. So I'll give you the case. Somebody builds a table and only puts three legs on it. It's not a table yet. The guy puts in the fourth leg, he built it. Correct. There's no doubt that because he made the table. The other guy just started construction. He didn't build anything. So certainly will not be Makabu Patish. Will he violate Bona? That's a different issue. But Makabu Patish is the guy who makes it usable. Only the last guy. Nobody else. Yeah. This is not easy Gemara. Not easy Mishnayos. What?
I'm with you.
I didn't want to say that. I don't know. I think if we had a bigger audience, and it was a regular Wednesday night, and the sentiment was that it says, I'll make a change again.
But we're the
lawyers. Okay? So. Okay. Let's take just one more phrase of the Mishnah. One more phrase. Forget about the whole rest of the Mishnah. Go back to the first page. Because the last page is dealing with three phrases down the road. We're not going to get to that tonight. Nichasim she'ein bahem mi'ila. The only time that you can be held accountable for damages is if you damaged an item which is not subject to the laws of mi'ila. Mi'ila means deriving benefit from something that belonged to the Beit HaMikdash. So if you took this chair and said, Ani makdish et hakisei hazeh lebeit HaMikdash, this chair belongs to the Beit HaMikdash. If I were to sit on it, I would violate the prohibition of mi'ila. It's the equivalent of theft. You have to pay, you gotta pay a korban, a mi'ila, very nice. Says the Mishnah, if instead of sitting on it, I take it and I smash it, I don't pay a penny. I don't pay one penny.
Because it cannot be used anymore in the
Beit. Nope, no, because it belongs to the Beit HaMikdash and not a regular person. The Torah uses the expression Shor Shel Re'ehu. An ox that gores what? The ox of your Mazareyehu? Your friend. The Beit HaMikdash is not your friend. So the Gemara concludes, comes to the Midrash Halacha. There's no logic. The Midrash Halacha says that if I cause damage to Hekdesh, I don't pay for the damages.
You can't sit on it, but if you cause it, you're not allowed to sit on it. But
that's correct. Doesn't it sound absurd? Yes, I grant you that. Nechasim, only I can be held accountable for damages to property she'ein bahem mi'ila. But if they nechasim, possessions, I damage possessions, property she'ein bahem mi'ila, that are not subject to the laws of mi'ila. What property is not subject to the laws of mi'ila? Personal property, everything. But if it is subject to the laws of mi'ila, my damaging it does not generate culpability on my part.
And the you damage it does not have anything to do with the person who made it.
The person who made it Hekdesh
has nothing to do with it.
He doesn't own it anymore.
Right.
It's in his house, but it belongs to the Beit HaMikdash.
And it doesn't matter who's doing the damaging.
That's correct. Makes no difference. It's a very difficult halacha to swallow. But that's what it says. It's only limited to nichasin she'ein bahem mi'ila. Next phrase, and with this I'll conclude. This is very difficult to understand. Nichasim she'ein shel b'nei brit.
So if it's a non-Jew...
That is correct.
There's no responsibility.
That is correct. Only, and here is, if I steal from a Gentile, I violate biblical theft. Damages, I don't have to pay a nickel. Is it logical? No. Next time I'm going to try to extract a conclusion from that. A conclusion. But that's what the Mishnah says. Nichasin shehein shel b'nei brit. Only members of our faith, of our covenant community. But if you're not part of our covenantal community, the laws of damages, theft applies. You're not allowed to steal a nickel, a penny from a Jew to violate an Issa D'oraisa of Lo Tignov. But damages, you're not obligated to pay. It's learned that from a pasuk. Re'ehu v'lo shalakum. Your friend socially is not a Gentile, in the halachic sense. In the halachic sense. Re'ehu v'lo shalakum.
What about
Chil Hashem? I didn't say you're allowed to do this. Chil Hashem, of course, will be there. But Chil Hashem doesn't create compensatory damages. That's between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm talking about you and the Gentile. Can a Gentile sue you in court to pay for the chair? The answer is he cannot. He cannot. There will be another sugya later, a minor who causes damage. Tough thoughts. His parents are not obligated to pay.
Isn't it like the ox that you have to
hold for snare? No. Can you imagine that? Your kid runs scot-free. Your ox, you pay for. It's not terribly logical. I grant you that. Okay?
You have to assume
we should check with Susan about this.
What?
We should check with you about this.
Okay, we'll stop here and continue next Avach with the rest of this Mishnah. Wednesday night, the next couple of weeks, back to Wednesday night. No problem.